I don't typically like English muffins.
What?
I don't know. I've just never
really. What's wrong with you? English muffins are so, you know, you just reminded me that I want to buy some. They're so good.
I guess I grew up on biscuits. Biscuits were a foundational piece of like breakfast bread.
But how do you feel about bagels?
I've come around on bagels. Bagels took me a minute, but bagels are.
But you know that there's a lot of bad bagels out there.
Yeah. This is the only place I will eat bagels. Like if I'm
That's good. Means you have a palate. Yeah.
Thank Hi, Dan. You. I appreciate that. You see how I deal with Dan all the time.
Have you ever considered that you're sensitive? That I'm just normal? Have you thought about that?
I've considered that I'm right and you're wrong.
This is The Sporkful. It's not for foodies, it's for eaters. I'm Dan Pashman. Each week on our show, we obsess about food to learn more about people. And today on the show, we're doing one of my favorite things. We're going to take your calls and settle your food disputes. But first, I want to introduce two very special guests who are going to help me out. They are Brittany Luce and Eric Eddings, co-hosts of the podcast For Colored Nerds. Hey, Brittany and Eric.
Hey.
Hi.
How's it going?
It's going great. Thanks so much. I'm psyched to have you both here. Now, we should just set you up a little bit. For Colored Nerds was a podcast that the two of you started independently a while back. Then you segued to co-hosting The Nod for a few years. Yeah. And now you have relaunched For Colored Nerds to much enthusiasm. Very exciting. For folks who haven't heard it, how would you describe the show?
It's a weekly show about Black culture, which means we talk about, you know, music, TV, movies, food, art, literature, all those things. But also, it's a show about friendship, because Eric and I have been friends for like 16 years. We've been working together for 7 years, nice. Which blows my mind every
impossible
day.
Impossible to imagine. We've made it this long.
It's impossible to imagine we've made it this far. But yeah, also like, you know, I'm sure Eric and I are going to get into a fight at some point in this episode. Yeah. And if you like that, you're going to love For Colored Nerds.
I love For Colored Nerds. Yeah.
I mean, that's a lot of what I love about your show is that I feel like there's always a lot of thoughtful and, you know, insightful discussion about culture, but it's, you know, there's also the relationship between the two of you, which almost makes the show feel serialized from one episode to the next.
Interesting. You know, yeah.
Topics may change, but there's always Brittany and Eric to check in on. And then that makes it feel like an ongoing story, which I really appreciate.
Well, thank you. That's such an awesome way to think about the show.
And as you said, Brittany, food is one of the aspects of culture that is a topic on For Colored Nerds. And I know that you both have strong opinions about food, especially you, Brittany. I'm going to classify you as the one with the hotter hot takes.
Yes. It's accurate. Accurate. That's Are they true. Valid? Are they valid?
They're valid. They're valid. Let the people decide.
Yeah. And one of these hot takes is about the correct way to eat wings. So we should get into that. And just to set it up a little. So now, Eric, you've said that For Colored Nerds might not exist without Popeyes.
It's a fact. We would actually meet at Popeyes to discuss what we were going to do on the show, or before we had like big business meetings for Good Luck, we would meet at Popeyes. Mm-hmm. It was always just a safe space.
But Brittany, I understand you and Eric have some disagreements about the correct way to eat the wings at Popeyes.
Well, you know what? Eric and I don't have a disagreement. Eric has a disagreement with the rest of the human race about how to eat wings. That's the big issue. Okay. So the thing is that one day Eric and I were at Popeyes. Eric got wings and we were eating, we were talking, and I noticed that he had left the wing tip. The wing tip, for people who are not familiar with whole chickens, is that third little flap
thing.
The pointy thing that comes on chicken wings. The bones are typically pretty hollow, and when they're fried and covered in some sort of breading or flour coating,
this is where we start.
They are delicious to eat.
I threw one away.
Yes,
in front
he threw
of
it
you.
Away. He threw it away.
Wow.
And that's the thing that blew my mind. When I saw that go into the little garbage receptacle, I was just like, why are you wasting food? And then I realized that he didn't eat wingtips. And
I picture the wingtip going into the garbage in slow motion, like flying through the air, and Brittany like lunging after it, like, no.
I threw it like a basketball. It was actually a really good shot.
Right.
Accurate. Like, oh, look at me.
So, Eric, how do you respond? You're not a wingtip guy?
I think wingtips are a vestigial product of the chicken. I don't think they are essential to a happy wing experience. I think wingtips do have a purpose. It is making stock. There are like little weird bones in there. And my thing is like, I know, but I don't want to have to go through all that. I want some good, like, I want the wing meat. I'm not into just chewing on collagen. Oh, it's salty.
It's
that's
not
fine.
Collagen. This is how I know you've never even been into one, because the way you just described it is
well,
not even correct.
Okay, whatever.
No,
I think
I gotta side with Brittany on this one. Like when I make the turkey at Thanksgiving, wow. when that turkey Steve. Comes out of the oven, the first thing that I do is snap off the wingtips, the charred, crunchy, fatty, salty wingtips, and just chomp down on those things when they are hot and you crunch right through it. It is the crunchiest bite of a bird that you can experience without eating straight bone.
You know, I've trusted your opinions for so long and really never, ever doubted you until this exact moment because you are wrong. It's just taking up space. That's a bite of the amazing mashed potatoes or like anything else in your plate, in your
buffet.
You're
talking about like stomach space?
Yeah, stomach space. I don't think you don't need it. You don't.
No, this is the thing. You don't understand. It's a vital part of the experience. It's just like, okay, everybody knows what's the best sandwich that they sell at Wendy's. It's a junior bacon cheeseburger. Everybody knows that. Like the ratio of it is correct. The price point is amazing. The dependability, you know, it's never going to be off the menu. That's like going to Wendy's, getting a junior bacon cheeseburger and being like, you know what? I want to eat two more fries. Let me peel the bacon off of this because it's going to give me more room. You're taking away an essential part of the experience.
One more quick question. Eric, I understand that you are a big fan of soup.
Yes. Oh,
so,
man.
So, like, if wingtips are, like, one of the crunchiest things that you can eat, soup is, like, on the opposite extreme.
Yes. Yeah. No, I love soup. I love pretty much every iteration or type of soup. Doesn't matter. Temperature outside.
You guys were in New Orleans, and of all the things to eat there, Eric got soup. Is that right?
It was like
he
at a bar
some
or something,
too,
right?
But yes. Explain how we ended up at this bar.
You know, we were out, like, hopping around. And we got to this really, well, I thought it was a really nice bar. We were all excited to kind of hang out at the bar. The music is good. And I'm there, I'm ordering a drink, and they have soup. They have pho. And it was the most perfect combination of things. Good music, like the bar atmosphere, you know, refreshing alcoholic beverage, and pho at the bar, congregating, fellowshipping with my friends. It's perfect. All bars should serve pho.
Yeah, I mean, soup as bar food is an interesting concept. Because most, at least in the U.S., most bar food is like finger food.
Yeah. I mean, the thing about it for me that is important, I actually think soup is the, like, social lubrication we really need. Because you have to be who you are when you eat soup. If you I think you have to be your fullest self when you eat soup. There are the people who, you know, they try to like hide and try to be like dainty with it. There are folks who like are just kind of getting in that bowl or like even putting it to their mouths, drinking the broth. You can see the true essence of a person by how they eat soup.
So you're saying, Eric, like if a person eats soup with gusto, it's an indication that they have more of like a general lust for life.
Absolutely. They take life by the reins. You know, like what is a little splatter on your shirt?
Right, but they don't have so much lust for life that they'll bite into a wingtip.
Well, everybody has to have boundaries, you know? Like, what are we, you know, are we people? Are we animals?
This is flimsy for me, Eric. This is not working for me. This is feeling flimsy.
I think it holds up.
I'm being honest with you.
I'm going to own it.
All right, well, listen, I think we have established that the two of you are great friends. You have a lot of opinions about food. Mm-hmm. Now, as you know, we ask listeners to call in with their food-related disputes, arguments, disagreements with friends or loved ones. And now, Brittany and Eric, it's time for you to help mediate some of these disputes. Are you ready?
Yes, let's do it.
Born ready.
All right, let's go to the phones. Hi, who's this?
Hi, this is Jesse from the Bronx. I'm in my school in Manhattan.
Jesse, I hear some church bells in the background. That can confirm that you're somewhere in a noisy, cacophonous place. Jesse, how old are you?
I am 13 years old.
I just want to confirm, Jesse, you're in school. Are you missing class right now?
Good question.
Yeah, I convinced my teacher to let me miss class.
That is fantastic. I think this call is going to take a long time. I
yeah,
think
Jesse.
We need to spend a lot of time unpacking these issues.
We got to dig deep.
And I'm currently sitting in the principal's office.
Oh, wow. All right.
Most quiet place in the building.
All right. So, Jesse, what can we do for you?
So, a couple weeks ago in class, we were discussing how to have a respectful argument and discussion prompts. And my teacher like asked my class if we have any ideas for like an argument that people are having. So a friend of mine, he brought up that I put ice in my milk, which he finds to be outrageous. And he once saw me drinking the milk with ice. And he was like, that's insane. And then he brought it up in class. I start to explain my reasoning and everybody in my class, I'm not in a very large class. It's only 10 people, but the other 8 people go on his side.
Mm. Oh my gosh.
That's rough, man.
Can you summarize for us what was your argument and what was his argument?
So his argument is that the milk, when you put the ice in it, it becomes watery. But my argument is that I am not drinking milk slow enough. It's not like if I take a sip, then put it down and then pick it up back up again, it's going to have a completely different taste. When the milk is in the fridge, it's already cold. Mm-hmm. But when there's really a lot of ice in it, it
hits different.
Mm.
Yeah, it's different. Yeah.
I totally get it. I'm lactose intolerant now, but the first 17 years of my life, I was a big milk drinker and I often drank it with ice. What do you typically drink milk with?
I don't drink milk like a full glass of milk on a daily basis. I have over the past week to prepare for today.
Bravo.
We appreciate
it. He's preparing. Yes, he's doing research. Very good. Your teachers have taught you well, Jesse.
Like, you can't go wrong with a glass of milk with like cookies.
Yeah.
Spicy foods like are notoriously like hand in hand with milk.
Right. Mm-hmm. Have you ever tried taking a glass of milk, like pouring a glass of milk and putting the glass of milk in the freezer for 10 minutes, maybe? It's not going to freeze solid in that time, but it will chill the milk closer to the temperature that you want it to be without having to add ice.
I have not tried that, but here's my issue with that, is that okay. I have a decent sized fridge that has a freezer that is much smaller, and it would be very hard to fit the glass of milk in the freezer so that it's not knocked down without completely reorganizing my freezer.
Also, it's not instant. You know what I mean? Like, you can put the ice in the glass and put the milk on top and it's like done in a snap.
It's not like I'm like, oh, I really want milk in 10 minutes. It's like...
Fair enough.
I also want to add that nobody else in my class has tried milk with ice.
Mm.
So I think they have a more reasonable argument if they like take a glass, put milk in, and then put ice in.
And as someone who's done their research, you know, you feel a lot more confident in that position.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In order for the ice to chill the milk, the ice has to melt at least a little. Now, I understand you're saying you drink it fast enough that it doesn't melt a lot. But to whatever degree there is some watering down of the milk, that's a feature, not a bug, as far as you're concerned.
Yes. So if my research is correct, milk is about 90% water.
I didn't know that.
Thank you.
Yeah. Even if the little bit of water gets in, actually, it's not that significant of a difference as one might think it to be.
You've got great school.
Yeah, you really do. Because I mean, like, the empirical evidence that you are pulling up, this is like an episode of Law and Order.
Yeah.
Really and truly, it's just like Law and Order. I grew up drinking skim milk. I did not actually drink whole milk until I was like 11 and I ordered it at a restaurant. I didn't know that that's how it could come. I still put ice in my skim milk because I always felt like milk was so watery anyway. You're a really enterprising person. Maybe you can get one or two people who can kind of be like the change agents.
I'm not sure how willing they'll be to admit, though, if I am actually right.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, Jesse, I think now you're learning a tough but useful life lesson, which is that
<That's> very true.
A lot of people don't like to admit when they're wrong.
Mm.
People might also go by the majority opinion.
So here is what I think. I would agree with Brittany that you're a very enterprising person. And I think that's also clear based on the fact that you were able to convince your teacher and the principal of your school to let you skip class to come on a podcast to talk about milk.
Here's another part of the story I didn't mention. The principal of the school is my mom.
Oh my God. That is amazing.
Yo, plot twist.
Yes.
Major plot twist, Jesse. You had us.
Yeah. Well, I think you're right. Here's the thing. Having the right thing at the right temperature at the right mm-hmm. moment is excellent. And a little bit of water, I agree, doesn't like, you know, override that. I agree that you need to do some more testing and working kind of behind the scenes. I think you can really convince your class. You've convinced me. I just met you. And I was on the fence about this whole thing. But the thing that also made me feel like you might have a point here is when I was in elementary school, they would give us cartons of milk, but our schools were, you know, a mess. And so I don't know what it was about our refrigerator, but they would always come out as blocks of ice. So we were often just peel the, this is disgusting, but we would peel the carton off and lick the functional milk ice cube. So like remembering that, I feel like, you know, live your truth. Put that ice in the milk. Go for it.
My grandmother actually freezes her cartons of milk like intentionally. So then you have this like bizarre milk slushy. My brother really likes it, but it's really weird in cereal. It's like, is that?
I feel you on that.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
First of all, I agree with Eric and Brittany. Like, you know, here on The Sporkful, I often quote the Latin maxim, de gustibus non est disputandum. In matters of taste, there can be no dispute. Mm. And if this is how you like your milk, then it's not wrong. You know, this is just your taste. But we did a show years and years ago on The Sporkful about iced coffee. And we had an argument over how much ice do you want in your iced coffee and the issue of the ice melting too much and watering down the coffee. And one of the suggestions to deal with that is coffee ice cubes. Whoa. I would suggest, Jesse, you could try the same thing. Fill an ice cube tray with milk and use milk ice cubes. And then you get your ice cold milk without watering it down.
That's a pro tip.
That's such a good idea.
Yeah.
Milk ice cubes. That's genius.
There you go. What do you think of this idea?
I like it. I don't know, like, how willing, though, I'll be to, like, be like, oh, in the future, I'm going to want a glass of milk with ice. Mm. So now I'm going to freeze ice cubes. But it's worth a try.
All right. Well, Jesse, I think that does it on our end. But if you would like to continue to stare at the screen with your headphones on and pretend like you're talking to us for another few hours to stay out of class, that's totally fine. Good luck. Take care, Jesse.
Good luck.
Bye.
See you.
All right, Eric and Brittany, we got another call lined up. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk some more. You guys stick around.
I'm on it.
I'm here.
It's time to open up a can of advertisements.
Welcome back to The Sporkful. I'm Dan Pashman. We had a great story for you in last week's show. I hope you make sure to check it out. It's a story with my friend Mandy Neglich as she tries to become the 20th Master Cicerone in the world. A Master Cicerone is like the beer equivalent of Master Sommelier. Now, Mandy's an award-winning home brewer. She's a beer writer and educator. And now she's been studying for more than 2 years for this test. Passing it would mean a lot to her.
It's definitely something that I feel like a lot of women go up against is like needing these certifications to prove that we're worthy. And I don't know that that's necessarily a good thing, but it is important to me. I think it's a nice thing to say, hi, I want to host your event and I am an expert and I'm one of only 20 in the world.
In this episode, I also very selflessly offer myself up as Mandy's study buddy as she walks me through how to taste and identify different beers. You know, this is just what I do for my friends. All right, that episode's up right now. Find it wherever you got this one. Thanks. Okay, now back to my guests, Brittany Luce and Eric Eddings, co-hosts of the podcast for Colored Nerds. Welcome back, Eric and Brittany.
I'm ready for the next call. Who are we talking to now?
Shaking with anticipation.
All right, so on the line right now, we have Gautam in Nashville. Say hi to my friends, Brittany and Eric.
Brittany, hi, Eric.
Hey.
Hi, Gautam.
And we also have Gautam's best friend, Aaron, on the line from LA.
Hi, everyone.
Hey, Aaron.
All right, Gautam, get us started here. What's the issue?
I'm excited to talk about my long-running dispute with my best friend, which started about 10 years ago when we took our first road trip. At that point, we had been friends for over a decade and decided that we would go from San Francisco to LA. And I did all this research. I asked friends who lived in different areas, like, where should we go to eat? Because eating is very important. You know, I presented Aaron with this sort of plan of how we were going to spend the week, at least in terms of food. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of the trip, I remember we had this conversation where he mentioned, sort of in passing and sort of usually on the snarky one, so with a little more snark than I anticipated, a comment that was basically like, well, you know, like you did plan on this food and you know, God forbid we go to like a chain restaurant or like a fast food place. And I was like, well, yeah, I mean, we're on vacation. I'm not going to LA to like eat at the Olive Garden. And then we took multiple trips after that for years. And I don't think we ever like really worked out like what we would do about this. I basically just continued to be me and be like, let us find the best place imaginable. And as with everything else, Aaron just sort of semi-quietly went along with it.
This feels close, I have to say. This feels close.
All right, Eric, pause that thought because I do want to come back to that. But first, I just want to make sure that we're understanding the issue here. So we've got two best friends who want to travel together, but they've got different ideas about how they want to eat on those trips, right? Gautam, you're saying you like to plan. You want to find all the best food out there. Aaron, I gather you're saying you want to keep things a little more casual. Is that right?
So part of this dispute, I think, came out of the fact that I had, shortly before we took this trip, I had done a road trip with my brother. And one of the kind of highlights of the trip was a stop at an Applebee's where we happened to win a trivia contest and we got a free meal.
Oh, amazing. So that's fun.
This totally sort of serendipitous event that it turned out my brother had actually kind of planned to go to this place because he knew they were going to have a trivia contest. But, you know, I don't know that we planned the trip around Applebee's in Portsmouth, New Hampshire.
And so, Aaron, what did you take from that experience?
So I think for me, it was very much about the serendipity you kind of experience, especially in the setting of a road trip. I'm absolutely, you know, all for finding great food options. I do love food, but I also want to be able to sort of go with the flow of the trip. I want to be able to stop when I'm hungry. I want to be able to sort of pick a place where maybe it's about a weird experience as much as it is about like the real high quality food.
It sounds like you guys are just oriented in two completely different places. Like even if you both really, really, really enjoy a great meal and a great dining experience, it sounds like, you know, Gautam, you might be the planner and Aaron, you might be somebody who's a little bit more open to serendipity and like the randomness that traveling can bring about. Am I misreading?
Oh yeah. I mean, no one would ever call me flexible, like ever. you know, like truth. I'm a gay Indian American lawyer, right? Like there's just a schedule. There's like a Stalinist 5-year plan and you know, we're just gonna stick to it.
And Aaron, it sounds like though, that's not the case for you.
I pride myself on my adaptability or my willingness to kind of go with an experience. I want to meet people where they're at. I want to try places I haven't necessarily been and see what I like about them or find what I like about them. In the context of this trip, my priding myself on my adaptability was, I think, maybe contrasted with Gautam really wanting to present this kind of curated experience, this really refined experience.
Gautam, can I ask you, so when you two are on this road trip and you have this plan, you have specific ideas about exactly where you want to go to eat, and Aaron is kind of resisting, how did that feel?
I was a little surprised. I think in part because growing up, like, you know, my parents, you know, they grew up on a farm in India and, you know, the idea of going to a restaurant was just not really something they dealt with. And when they came to the US in the early 70s, I think for a while, you know, we had some fast food, but by the time I came around, I was the youngest, it wasn't really just part of what we did. We almost either had almost every meal at home, and then we would occasionally go out and it would be like to like nice places, right? And I'm using scare quotes there because I think there's a lot of class and race encompassed in that, which I didn't realize until a while later. But you know, I think also very strongly in my family and in my community, like food is love, right? Like you can't get 5 minutes without setting into some auntie's house without getting a bunch of pakora stuff in your mouth. And so like the idea of like planning food, I think was also me being like, I will ask everyone I know. I will like spend all this time procrastinating on the internet looking
for
places.
It's not procrastinating if it brings a result.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I will keep that in mind.
Eric, you were saying earlier that you felt that this issue hit close to home for you. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah. So I am the type of person who, like when I travel, if there's a Ruby Tuesdays or a Cheesecake Factory, I'm going. It's not always the most amazing food, but there's a level of consistency that can be like important that allows me to put my focus somewhere else. But I will say, and this is actually one of the few points that I will give Brittany some praise, is that I think it actually was Brittany who helped me when it came to traveling. She is the gay Indian lawyer who does all the research to find a list of 5-star Yelp review restaurants. And I must admit, my traveling experiences have been a bit better embracing a little bit of that tactic. I see some parallels in the experience.
I do like to research and know where there is to eat. I'm not great with always scheduling things in advance. My older sister, who actually is also a lawyer, and gay, I think, but she...
it happens.
She always has given us a schedule for everything with every family trip. She's really good about planning in advance, making reservations, counting, thinking about travel time. Where's everybody coming from? I'm not great at that. I think that that's a superpower. What I'm hearing is not just a difference in preference, but also a difference in expression. I don't know. I don't even know if I really believe in the whole love languages thing, because I think that I need all 4 of the love languages coming at me all the time. But it sounds like you guys might have some sort of fundamental difference in how you might express care and want to receive care.
Did you understand, Aaron, this was Gautam's way of trying to do create a nice experience for you? Like, it may be imperfect, but it's his way of expressing
care. Yeah, absolutely. Not to bring too much of our 25 years of being friends into this, but Gautam's an extremely talented cook and baker. He has in the past, made cookies, made cakes, and sent them in the mail to me. I have felt some difficulty in receiving these kinds of things sometimes, because I'm not a talented baker. I'm not sending him baked goods in return. Why are you sending me these things all the time? I feel like there's this kind of imbalance in the degree of giving we're showing to one another.
So I am a planner often, especially around food. So I can certainly understand your perspective, Gautam. I remember a time right after college, I was hanging out with my college friends. We were all getting ready to go somewhere. And I had planned we were going to go, I don't know, we used to go bowling a lot. I think we were probably going bowling. And they're all just chilling on the front steps. And I look at my watch, I'm like, oh, we got to get going. I come out onto the front steps and one of them looks up and immediately says, uh-oh, here comes the plan. And I was like, ouch, don't you understand? I just want us to all have a good time. I didn't say that, but that's what I was thinking. Sorry, but someone's going to be the grown-up here or we're going to miss bowling. But at the same time, they were all having fun sitting on the front steps and maybe we could have never gone bowling that day and it would have been also a perfectly lovely afternoon. So, Brittany and Eric, what are your thoughts on Gautam and Aaron's issue?
It's clear that you both care a lot about each other and you both care a lot about your friendship. And this has become a lot more emotional than I was originally anticipating. It sounds like you're at a point where it's kind of how can we kind of meet each other halfway? What I have found that works for me, and that has worked when traveling with a variety of people for work, is have a list and put it in a map, Google Maps, of places that we want to go. Have some places that are non-negotiables. Everybody picks their non-negotiables. We have to do this. We have to do this. And that could be food or an attraction. And then in between there, kind of keep it breezy so that if we're wandering around or if we're driving and then I see, we're near these places and they're on my map, then we can go to one.
You're trying to find a balance between the plan and the spontaneity.
Yeah.
To your point, what's an hour in a Zaxby's really going to do to you? I don't think it's the end of the world. I think plan probably if you have 4 stops, one of them you leave open and the other 3, you're stopping at great restaurants. Aaron, I think you rolling with that and seeing it as an act of service, I think gets you there. But I think, for you, I think a lot of times you may be preoccupied with what to do back, but often you just really need to say man, I really appreciate you picking out a few of these restaurants. I even have to give Brittany words of affirmation occasionally to maintain our friendship.
Just scraps, little pieces.
Just, you know.
Tell me about this. What is that like for you? How does that happen?
Just enough.
I will say, on my last trip to Nashville, we did a stop at Bolton's Hot Chicken, and it was completely worth it. And one of the greatest benefits I have had of Gotham's planning.
Well, I would say as a Memphian, I prefer Gus's, but I will say that is damn good.
So here's what I'll say. As someone who doesn't eat meat, my go-to is just to bring all my white boy friends to Bolton's and watch them cry. Because it could be a serious, like, just there's been like at least four of them. It's a gift that I think all of us, especially people of color, can really, you know, engage more with.
Just to watch how it happens.
I'm so glad I could give you that gift.
You guys are amazing.
This is really, you all made me actually remember how much I appreciate Eric.
Wow.
It wanes and waxes during the week. Well, you said something nice about me today. That's on record. Right. I'm sitting here, I'm quaking.
Oh, well, I think we've all made a lot of progress here
today.
There's
like a group hug happening on Zoom right now.
Yeah, virtual group hug. Well, Aaron and Gotham, best of luck on your next road trip or gathering in LA or Nashville or wherever it is. And I hope you have some delicious planned meals and some delicious spontaneous ones.
Thanks, everyone. Thanks.
All right, Brittany Luce, Eric Eddings. The podcast is for colored nerds. You're both on social media too. Eric on Twitter, you're at E Eddings. Brittany, you're at BM Luce, L-U-S-E. Mm-hmm. And then on Instagram and Twitter, the show is at For Colored Nerds. You guys, I love your podcast and everything you do. It's been really great hanging out. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. It's been so much fun.
Yeah, seriously, I've had a blast.
Next week on the show, I talk with comedian Margaret Cho about her struggles with an eating disorder. While you wait for that one, make sure you check out last week's show. It's the story of Mandy Neglitch's attempt to become the 20th Master Cicerone in the world and only the fourth woman to hold the title. That one's up now. This show is produced by me, along with senior producer
Emma Morgenstern,
and producers
Andres O'Hara
and
Johanna Mayer.
Additional editing help from
Corinne Wallace.
Our editor is
Tracy Samuelson.
The show is mixed by
Jared O'Connell.
Music help from Black Label Music. The Sporkful is a production of Stitcher. Our executive producers are Peter Clowney and Daisy Rosario. Until next time, I'm Dan Pashman.
And I'm Erin in Albuquerque, New Mexico, reminding you to eat more, eat better, and eat more better.